Highway 12 corridor west of Lolo is filled with the sound of helicopters and chainsaws as firefighters rush to corral the Lolo Creek complex before the forecast strong winds arrive this evening. Good evening. I'm Edward O'Brien.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And the nation's top priority fire tops our news again tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Firefighters and resources continue to pour into Lolo to fight the 9,500-acre Lolo Creek Complex fire. After two straight days of fire blowups, firefighters finally caught a break with the wind yesterday and so far today to try to keep the fire from moving into the populated Sleeman Gulch and the town of Lolo. The fire remains about 4 miles west of town, where over 500 firefighters are now working furiously to protect homes and slow the fire's movement eastward. Five homes have already been lost, and hundreds of people are either evacuated or on pre-evacuation notice. Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mock has been on the fire for most of today, and she joins us again live in the studio. Sally, what's the latest?
Well, Ed, as you say, this has been a very, very busy day on Highway 12 with firefighters literally from around the country and Montana National Guard soldiers being deployed at roadblocks, at homes that are threatened, and along the fire's eastern edge. The big hope today was to continue to attack that eastern flank with helicopter water drops and air tanker retardant and dozer lines. Jim Harrington is the branch director on that eastern flank, basically the general directing the troops.
We're trying to just hold this fire in check here for the next couple hours until we get a line built along the opposite ridge over there so that we can go ahead and fire that off and secure it into the highway down here.
And we're pretty much on the eastern flank of the main fire right here?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, this is the eastern flank. That's what we're trying to do, is hold it in this from crossing the draw right there. That's why we've got the helicopters working actively in there to try to hold it in check on that side of the draw. If it crosses the draw on the other side, it will definitely kind of interfere with what our plans are on the opposite ridge. So.
And what are the plans on the opposite ridge?
We're building pushing a dozer line down the ridge line, down to a certain point where we intersect with a chunk of hand line that a hotshot crew put in. And then once we have the line complete, then we have to have time to implement a firing operation to fire it off and tie it back into the bottom.
Do you feel like you're racing against the clock today with the forecast winds?
Yes, we are. Yeah, I mean, right now the winds are favorable because they're out of the east, but here in the next couple hours, you're supposed to rotate around and switch from the west and start kind of pushing the other direction, which will definitely cause problems for us.
So trying to get this tight as you can before that happens.
Exactly. Right now we're trying to hold it on that side of the draw, on the west side. So we got an opportunity and a chance to finish what we're doing. You can see the dust coming up right up there. Mm-hmm. That's where the dozer's coming down the ridge right now. So.
And Ed, they were doing drop after drop on that eastern edge, helicopters getting water out of Lolo Creek and trying to take advantage of what were calmer winds today.
Yeah, Sally, the big concern remains homes up Sleeman Gulch, which is now a mile and a half or so east of the fire.
That's right, Ed, and I went up there as well today, and in the upper part of the gulch you can see it's about 10-foot wide gash in the earth right next to the homes where a bulldozer has built a line. And while I was there, a group of firefighters from Michigan, led by crew chief Peter Costa, was getting ready to saw out some of the thick understory to prepare for a possible burnout if the fire gets that far.
We're prepping the line to possibly burn it out.
How far are you doing it?
Well, they've got it put in all the way down to the drop point.
The dozer line we saw.
So we're just going to start working this northern part of the line and clearing it out.
And you're ready to leave if the winds pick up, like they say?
We'll be ready to go.
One way in, one way out.
Yeah, we'll be ready to go. We'll be able to get out of here.
And Ed, that gulch is a very narrow canyon up at that northern end. It's surrounded by dense underbrush and woods. And they hope they don't have to do a burnout up there, but they're preparing for it just in case.
Yeah, and if the fire got that far and if it crossed Sleeman Gulch, then they'd make another stand with a burnout just west of the town of Lolo.
That's right. But, of course, that's worst-case scenario, and they hope it doesn't come to that.
So, Sally, you also went into the Bear Creek area and saw one of the homes that burned down in Monday's fire.
I did, Ed, and what a devastating and sad sight that is to see someone's home and vehicles totally demolished by fire. And this home, like so many others along Highway 12 and in the adjoining canyons, was built right at the base of a wooded hillside where the fire rushed through. And if you drive up portions of Highway 12 right now, you'll see completely blackened hillsides. Some of that is from the main fire and some from backburns that have been set to protect the remaining homes. And firefighters like Seth Ellis, who's from Blacksburg, Virginia, are working to protect those homes.
We've been building some contingency line around some structures that can potentially be threatened, but as of right now, the fire's not really close to them, but it's just a little bit of hand line we put in to hopefully protect the structures if the fire even comes close to them.
What do you think of our fires up here, and what do you think of this one?
Oh, it's a beautiful area. I mean, as we flew in, I was, and I kind of text my wife, it's like, I'd like to move here, you know. It's a beautiful place, really like it a lot.
Not worried about the fire danger?
No, not at all, you know. We used to live in California as well, so it's kind of, you know, it's part of living in that kind of environment.
Yeah. Ed, it's hard to imagine this fire being a promotion for moving to Montana, but I guess if you're a firefighter, it still looks pretty good.
Well, I guess so. So many homeowners have taken fire officials' advice and evacuated from their homes that are near the fire or even in the fire's path, of course, but not all. I know you ran into some today who have decided to stay put.
I did. Roy Bay lives along Highway 12 between Sleeman Gulch and Bear Creek, and he was out in his driveway with his dog watching the helicopters drop water on still very active fire right behind his place.
See, it was here in 88, so I felt fairly safe here. Most of us that are here that stayed, because there's this big valley right over here, drainage burnt down in 88. And so it's got 25 years growth, but it wasn't nothing like what we've seen further up the hill and back over here at Sleeman, because we rode horses all over this country. And so we really wasn't worried about it, and they've just done all this as something to keep it from coming over anymore. And
setting their own fire to keep the fire from hitting your
keep
place.
Keep it in control.
Yeah. You don't sound too worried, sir.
Nope, not worried a bit at all. And I have to say this, for the firefighters down here, when it come around the corner, them boys stayed in a wall of flame to make sure that one house stayed there, and it stayed. So they're here to do a job. And, you know, if we can, we can help them. And I know they don't like it staying, but it's like, nope, I've been in this ball game more than once, and I'll stay here till the end.
Not your first rodeo.
Nope. Yep.
And Ed, Mr. Bay very descriptively mentioned just how much risk firefighters are putting themselves in to save his home and the other homes up Highway 12.
Well, I must say, Mr. Bay sounds like one tough character. And this fellow had fire, you say, actively burning right behind his place.
That's right. And part of it is a backburn that firefighters set on purpose to build a buffer. And Dan Light is another resident who has decided to stay.
I came back actually on a pass, and I decided it was going to be just as well. I thought the fire pretty much passed us. I believe they said this was a backfire, that they tried to cut it off so that it wouldn't go further on that way. But it seems like they were keeping pretty good control over it with the helicopters, but looks like it dropped down here pretty quick right now.
You got some sprinklers going here in your yard?
Yes, and I've had sprinklers going for...
Are you ready to go if you need to, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did evacuate at first when it first came over at Westerman, and then we came back on two passes, but we
Once
decided we were going to stay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Still, it's a little nerve-wracking, I got to say, standing here with you and watching the flame creep down.
No doubt, yeah, especially when you own your home and it's that close, you know, it's kind of a, it is a nerve-wracking thing for sure.
Tense week.
Yes, very tense. I've slept about 3 hours in the last 4 days, so... Yeah, it's tough.
And yet it is tough on residents and firefighters and everyone who's trying to get through this now five-day-old fire.
Yeah, and what's going to be keeping lots of people probably awake this evening into tonight, the storm front forecasts that are predicted to move through tonight and tomorrow, yes?
The next 24 hours, Ed, are really critical, and wind, of course, is the enemy, and also worries about new lightning starts, new fires.
So Highway 12 remains closed between Graves Creek at milepost 16 to the 93 junction at Lolo, and I know that there is another public meeting this evening.
There is, and that's at 8 o'clock in the lower gym of the Lolo School.
Well, Sally, thank you so much for giving us a descriptive, a fantastic front row seat on what's been happening today. Go get something to eat, get some sleep.
Okay.
We do have this one more note while we're here. The American Red Cross of Montana has now set up a disaster relief and information station in the center of Lolo. So station volunteers will not only provide fire information and maps from other agencies, they'll also provide things like water, snacks, and emotional and mental health support for residents now dealing with all the stresses that accompany such a crisis. The Red Cross says it will also continue to operate its existing evacuation shelter at Missoula's Christ the King Church.
And another news from around the state, U.S. Senator Max Baucus is hashing out ideas for a federal tax overhaul, something the Democrat wants to prioritize before leaving office in 2014. Baucus met in Helena today with the Montana Tax Council he formed a few months ago. The group is made up of leaders from various sectors of the state's workforce. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us the group believes the current tax code is overly complex and is causing the U.S. to lose some of its competitive edge against other nations.
It's caused a disproportionate burden on small business.
Senator Baucus, talking to the Montana Tax Council about the current federal tax structure, he says about 15,000 changes have been made to the tax code since the last overhaul in 86, which he equates to 15,000 complications. Too many loopholes, too many credits and deductions. Baucus wants to simplify everything. And so he wants to begin reform with an entirely clean slate.
Let's get rid of all this, the tax expenditures. And then start to build back up deductions, credits, whatnot, that seem to make the most sense.
The council gave Baucus a list of the priorities they would like to see in federal tax reform, and simplification is the first one. They would like the new system to be fairer, pointing out the Congressional Budget Office says of the 10 largest tax expenditures, the majority of that value went to the wealthiest 20% of taxpayers. The council wants more certainty, and they want the tax code to focus on job creation. The 15 members vary from Northwestern Energy CEO Bob Rowe to Flathead Valley Community College President Jane Karras, union leaders, business executives, farmers. The group is not presenting a united front on everything. Members disagree on if the tax reform should be revenue neutral, that is, whether it should bring in any more money. Baucus does want to bring in more money, he says, to lower tax rates and pay down the federal deficit. Bozeman-based West Paw Design President Spencer Williams disagrees.
We should seize the opportunity to get tax reform put through, and I think we should deal with those other issues like debt reduction separately.
The group does agree with the idea of removing tax deductions, but the question then becomes which ones to keep around. Here, the representatives of the different sectors advocate different things. Montana AFL-CIO Executive Secretary Alan Ekblad says the earned income tax credit is critical.
It's 87,000 Montana families claim the earned income tax credit. Changing that, taking that out of the mix, is going to have a dramatic and devastating effect on families.
The group also emphasizes tax incentives for things like innovation, education, and retirement. Baucus says the hardest part about this national reform will be convincing all the different stakeholders to give up something to contribute toward cleaning up the code. He hopes everyone will be able to take the leap together.
Something's got to be done about this, and that means we all, by definition, we all got to hold hands to a great degree.
He expects a fair amount of political opposition, but Baucus believes the country is heading toward a tipping point that will affect lawmakers.
Where there's a sense of inevitability, that is, oh my gosh, there's going to be reform, and I want to be on the train. I want to be part of this.
Baucus says he would like to release a tax reform proposal by this fall. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Right now, people living with asbestos-related diseases contracted from the W.R. Grace Mine in Libby and living in Flathead or Lincoln counties receive additional Medicare benefits. These benefits include compensation for medical-related travel expenses and medicine not traditionally covered through Medicare.
But if they now live outside of Lincoln or Flathead counties, those benefits are not available. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more from a recent visit Senator Max Baucus took with the head of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid in an effort to extend these benefits beyond these borders.
43-year-old John Troyer grew up in Libby, as did his parents and his grandparents. Troyer spent lots of time at his grandparents' house a few blocks away from his home while growing up. His grandfather worked at the vermiculite mine. In the 1990s, his grandfather died of asbestos-related disease. A few years later, Troyer's mother was diagnosed. In 2009, Troyer was screened and diagnosed with pleural fibrosis, which is a scarring of the pleural lining surrounding the lungs. The Center for Asbestos-Related Disease, or CARD Clinic in Libby, says all types of pleural fibrosis reduce the flexibility of this lining, limiting a person's ability to breathe deeply. Troyer now lives in Helena and says he's had problems when he's had to go to the emergency room for chest pains or coughs connected with his diagnosis.
When they would look at x-rays there, they would see like what to them appeared to be a shadow, so to speak, rather than the actual thickening of the lining. And so they thought that I was there for, you know, ulterior motives even, that I was there seeking drugs or that it was in my head.
Troyer qualifies for Medicare, but because he lives in Helena now, he does not qualify for benefits those living in Libby with the same diagnosis have.
Right now I have Medicare benefits, but I don't get reimbursed for my driving, and I come down here 2 to 4 times a year. There are certain medications that I have to take that are not covered by Medicare, but they are covered by the pilot program if I lived in Lincoln or Flathead County.
The pilot program he refers to is the additional benefits available to victims of asbestos exposure from the Libby mine. When the Environmental Protection Agency declared Libby a public health emergency in 2009, the residents became entitled to health care. However, Libby is the first Superfund site ever declared a public health emergency, and there was no mechanism in place to provide the health care. Senator Max Baucus says he included that mechanism in the health care reform law.
I'm, first of all, very pleased that we got a change in the law so that Medicare will not provide health benefits for people with asbestos-related disease, whether or not they've turned 65. It's that is independent of age. Medicare will cover, provide health care benefits for people with asbestos-related disease.
The additional benefits include special home services like shoveling snow, stacking firewood, housekeeping, grocery shopping, and other daily living assistance. They also include special medical equipment like oxygen, medications not usually covered by Medicare like anti-anxiety drugs, travel expenses for medical treatment, special counseling, and nutritional supplements. Senator Baucus says the goal now is to extend those benefits to people like Troyer living outside Lincoln and Flathead counties. He brought Administrator of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Marilyn Tavner, to Libby to meet with Troyer and others affected by asbestos-related disease, but living outside of Libby.
For one thing, it helps me to understand how mobile this community is, which I don't think I appreciated. The second thing is sitting there listening to stories about people who had lost a spouse, a parent, multiple children. It's overwhelming. So I'll take that back, and that will drive my decision about how to make sure everybody is taken care of, screened early, treated as appropriately as possible.
Tavner says her office has the authority to extend these benefits. They just need to figure out how to administer it.
So that's what we've got to figure out. Are there ways that as we modify this work, we can make sure we're picking up everyone who might have been exposed? We know it's a finite number over time, but we don't know where all those people are located or even if they're aware that they need to be screened and what to do. And so that's what we'll go back. We'll work with the clinic. We'll work with the senator's office and try to figure out how to do that.
The CARD clinic offers some statistics. In the past 2 years, it diagnosed just over 900 out of nearly 1,900 people with asbestos-related disease. Just about 300 of that 900 live outside of Flathead and Lincoln counties. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Imagine being forced from your home by an incoming wall of fire and having only minutes to decide what to grab on the way out the door. Those who've been through a sudden evacuation say it's a terrible experience. The director of the Missoula County Office of Emergency Management, Chris Lounsbury, says a little bit of planning and preparation can make a world of difference in a situation in which every minute, every second counts. In this evening's feature with Edward O'Brien, he offers some helpful advice. This has been a busy week for Lounsbury, who's part of the team dealing with the Lolo Fire Complex.
As you can imagine, with the Lolo Fire there, we've been working hard with the Sheriff's Department and Fire Department, coordinating the response to the fire down in Lolo Creek and getting in the assets that they needed with the incident management team. And as most folks have heard at this point, also we'll be joined by the National Guard, who's here doing a security detail to assist with the roadblocks and making sure that folks who've had to evacuate, that their property is safe during this time. As you probably heard, yesterday was a really good day on the fire. The weather really cooperated with them. They were able to get in with some planes to drop some retardant and cool that front eastern edge, and overnight and through the night they continue to work on that edge. So they get crews in there to do some work on trying to get some containment lines in front of that storm that's supposed to move through this afternoon.
And if the worst does happen, let's talk a bit about how to prepare for an evacuation order on a moment's notice. It seems like what you're saying is you begin with this thought, and that is life and limb is way more important than any object you have.
And that's really the case. I mean, when you think about it, you know, property can be replaced, but lives can't be. And so while it's tragic for folks, obviously, we've unfortunately lost some homes, and that has been very tragic. The most important thing is, so far, no one's been hurt on the fire. You know, what I recommend for folks is if you've gotten one of those sheets from the Sheriff's Department, which are kind of that day glow yellow-green color, that you take that information to heart and think about what are the most important items that you would have with you that you can't replace. You know, things like photos, old photos, things like copies of insurance policies, you know, medications that you might need, and have those items already pre-packed in a box so that if the worst does happen and we do have to issue more evacuation orders in areas, that you can get those things into your vehicle and then get out, because your life is worth more than anything else.
What about livestock? What if you have a couple of horses or a dozen head of cattle?
Sure. If you have livestock, you know, we have had several private citizens who've offered pasture land, and we have that information at our call center. Also, the fairgrounds is willing to take those animals as well. And if you're in that area, you certainly don't need to wait till that last minute to move those animals out. You can contact our information center at 258-4636, or contact the fairgrounds directly and move those livestock down there in advance. That, and then when you need to move them back, should the worst not happen, which is of course what we hope for, then you'll just need to move them back from that area. There's no charge for housing them out there at the fairgrounds. The only thing they ask is that you bring food for them, hay and things like that, because those are items they don't have there.
Dogs, cats, I imagine you organize with maybe friends out of town or animal control.
Correct. Animal control is set up again to house those folks. Again, no cost for folks to have to shelter their animals out at the animal control if they need to do that, or with friends and family is always a good choice as well.
A communication plan. You're headed out with your family, your friends, and you get split up. What do you do?
You know, the main thing is to have a plan in place in advance for where you're going to meet. You know, I always talk about, we've been really fortunate. While Highway 12 doesn't have the best cell phone coverage in that area has remained in effect, but obviously with the intermittent power outages that they've had and where the fire's burning, there's the potential that we could lose cell phone communications in there. So folks shouldn't rely just on a cell phone. You should have a plan together that if you lose communication with folks, you're going to meet up at a specific place, pick that place in advance, be at the Lolo post office or the super stop or wherever it's going to be, and just have that pre-designated so everybody knows if for whatever reason something happens, that's where you're going to get together in person.
And if the worst happens, a good idea to get in touch with the Red Cross to get your name on the record that you're out there somewhere?
It definitely is. You know, the Red Cross is the first step for help for folks. Even if they're staying with other folks, if they've been displaced from their home, it's important to get yourself registered with the Red Cross so that if folks are looking for you, the Red Cross can help make those connections. They have a great program called Safe and Well that uses a website where you can go and register. Just that way, if family members from out of state aren't able to get in touch with you, they can look. But it also helps the Red Cross to know that. And then if the worst does happen and there have been evacuations, the Red Cross assists the Sheriff's Department and others in making sure that that residents are accounted for.
You say storing phone numbers on our Androids, our iPhones, Blackberries, whatever, is not a great idea, yeah?
A good idea to store numbers on there, but it never hurts to try and memorize those little numbers. I'm old enough here that before there were cell phones, I could tell you the number for, you know, my folks' work and my home and my friends' homes and all those things, and I am as guilty as the next person. Now I program them in my cell phone, and where I don't have to dial the numbers, if you ask me what those numbers are sometimes, I can't remember what they are. So it is still important to try and memorize those few key numbers for folks that you need to be able to get in touch with.
And is it silly to think about supplies, spare food, water, anything like that? We're not talking about a hurricane here.
Right. So it's never a bad idea just in general for families to be thinking about preparedness, and food and water are obviously two of those things. We never know. You know, we live in Montana and the weather can change in a minute, so we never know when we might have a situation that would prevent us from getting out of our house. This isn't that kind of emergency. You know, wildland fire, generally speaking, you know, our supply lines aren't disrupted where you can't get out to a store or things like that. But it's never a bad idea to have that thought, and certainly when we have wildland fires, it's a good chance for people to take a few extra minutes and reassess what they have on hand and make sure that they have supplies that they might need.
Where can people find these tips?
They're on our website, which is co.missoula.mt.us, which is the main county website, and then there's a link there to the Office of Emergency Management. They can click on there. Certainly FEMA'sReady.gov is a great site to start with. It has all kinds of information for folks on getting plans and kits together. And then they are certainly welcome also to call our information line, which is manned right now between the hours of 8 in the morning and 7 o'clock at night at 258-4636.
Chris, I was on that site earlier today, and there's a little area where people, if they want to, they can make donations to families who have lost everything right now.
Yes, the United Way is taking care of setting that up, and then if folks choose to donate and afterwards the Red Cross is tracking folks who have needs, the United Way and the Red Cross in partnership with the county will work on getting those funds distributed out to folks as well. This is a good reminder for folks to take just a few quick minutes and get those things together, and again, just really important for folks to understand that, you know, possessions can be replaced. We all have those really sentimental possessions that we want to hold on to, but your life is always worth more.
Chris Lounsbery, Director of Missoula County Office of Emergency Management. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ed.
And in tonight's weather forecast, a red flag warning remains in effect until midnight tonight for thunderstorms across the Bitterroot, Deer Lodge, West Beaverhead, and East Beaverhead regions. Again, that red flag warning remains in effect until midnight tonight. Another red flag warning also remains in effect from midnight tonight until 3 p.m. tomorrow for thunderstorms across the Kootenai Flathead Glacier Park, West Lolo, Salish, and Kootenai Reservation, and East Lolo areas. Again, that red flag warning remains in effect from midnight tonight until 3 p.m. tomorrow. And across our listening area, tonight calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain showers and isolated thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, and lows will stay around 50 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies and with a chance of thunderstorms and showers. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, and highs will stay in the upper 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Paula Hovey.
Although you may not see us every day, Cloud Peak Energy is a proud part of Montana. Last year, the coal we produced, including from our Spring Creek mine, brought in more than $70 million in taxes, royalties, and local investments in Montana. These dollars help support local schools, hospitals, and community organizations committed to making this an even better place to live, work, and raise our families. Spring Creek Mine is Montana's largest coal mine, accounting for nearly half of the state's production in 2012, and has been recognized for its commitment to both safety and the environment. I'm not just a voice in this opinion piece. I'm a real person with a job that counts on coal production in Montana. I am a shovel operator at Spring Creek Energy, Spring Creek Mine. I have worked for Cloud Peak Energy for over 10 years. The shovel I operate is a $30 million piece of equipment that allows me to safely and efficiently load coal into $3 million trucks the size of small apartment buildings. If you can tell, I am very proud of what I do. The job I have at Spring Creek provides a good living for my family and allows us to enjoy a lifestyle that includes camping, fishing, hunting, and enjoying the outdoors. I'm also proud of the company I work for, Cloud Peak Energy. They care about me and my family with a focus on ensuring my work conditions are safe. I witness firsthand on a daily basis the reclamation work done by our crews, and I have enjoyed watching the land returned to a native condition with a diversity of plant species and animal habitats. Our coal helps supply safe, reliable, and affordable electricity for families and businesses throughout America, keeping energy costs low here at home. The work we do benefits Montana and creates hundreds of jobs, jobs which are not only at the mine but around the state, working on Montana's rail infrastructure or producing mining equipment or other essential components. Coal from Spring Creek Mine is also exported to Asian nations, including South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan. While demand from these countries is increasing, the U.S. is limited by a lack of additional export capacity on the West Coast. To meet this growing demand, the export terminals have been proposed in the Pacific Northwest that will benefit Montana. Developing export terminals in the Northwest United States and will bring substantial revenues to federal, state, and local governments, as well as high-paying jobs and help with the U.S. balance of trade. The terminals can also bring significant infrastructure investment for both port and rail, benefiting sectors like agriculture and manufacturing in Montana. Energy exports, including coal, are an important opportunity for Montana. We shouldn't let that go away. This is Paula Hovey, and I am a proud miner at Montana's Spring Creek Mine.
Paula Hovey is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.